My name is Billy Fiatta, and my background is in psychiatric mental health nursing, and I've been working both with adolescents as well as adult psychiatry. And as Larry said, I had finished a paper this summer on depression in women, although that isn't what we're necessarily going to talk about today. What I'd like to talk about today is mental health and how to cope, how to stay sane in this age of insanity, or maybe how to stay a little bit crazy in order to stay sane. I'd like to use a format where I invite your questions and comments. I'm not going to have a lot of answers for you. I think the answers are something that you have to provide for yourself. And I'd like to talk about health in general to begin with, and then some aspects of mental health, how we recognize this in ourselves and in others, and then give you a model that we're going to use. And I think we'll break up into some small groups and do some discussing of the model, and then come back and share some of the things that you talked about in the small group with the larger group. Let's talk about health a little bit. Anybody have any definitions of what health is?
Well, well-being, I'd say.
Well-being is a good start. When you stop to think about health,
kind of a relative thing to different people. If you believe you are healthy, you especially have your mental health. If you believe you are mentally stable and healthy, probably a good indication of some problem.
So it has to do with your own belief system, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Your own confidence in the way you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling good.
Feeling good? That's certainly an important part of it.
Everything in balance.
Everything in balance. That's a good concept. Balance. Any other ideas?
There's an element of stamina to what was said upstairs of stamina physically and mentally to be able to cope once you have a
So that health has to have a certain basic ingredient to it, stamina. But then it varies, so that there isn't a single definition for each person. Health has been defined as something you have until you discover that you no longer have it.
Right.
And I think that's a good description for many of us, in the sense that we take it for granted that it's a right that we have or a given, and suddenly discover that it's been altered, or we look at it in terms of non-health or less than healthy, or with our accident that we had coming out to Holden, and I had a injured collarbone, I was aware that I was not in ideal health. And that awareness was very evident every time I raised my arm and felt the pain or the decreased energy level, tired more easily. So there are all sorts of clues that you get in terms of being healthy or not healthy or somewhat healthy. We have often talked about health in terms of a dichotomy. You're healthy or not healthy. We think in terms of dichotomies a lot, whether it's health or illness. You're strong or you're weak. You hate or you love. child or you're an adult. And yet, when you stop to think about those, there's a lot of overlap. And there's a lot of overlap in terms of health. Can you be healthy and be diseased at the same time?
No.
No?
I think you can be healthy spiritually, but not healthy physically.
Say that again. You can be healthy
spiritually.
Spiritually.
But not physically.
But not physically.
You can be healthy diabetic.
All right.
What was that?
Diabetic.
So that having diabetes, you're already compromised in some way in terms of the ideal health, but can you still be healthy? What about disabilities? Are people with disabilities healthy?
Yes.
Can they be healthy?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So health and illness can coexist.
Well, I don't call disability illness.
Okay.
Illness is something that should be able to correct.
Should talk louder, Dorothy. Oh, people can't hear you.
Well, I just think illness is something that is that will go away, that you should be able to rid yourself of, but a disability, you cannot always.
What's that, you know?
The general illness is a breath away, or cancer.
So what do you do with that? Would everybody, when they speak out a little louder?
That's my disability, but I'm healthy.
We have a living specimen. Huh? Any other ideas on that?
I think that was a good example. A disability like a part of hearing, or maybe he has an artificial limb. He can be very healthy.
You see, human are always in a state of flux because there's always something breaking down, but always something being repaired, kind of inside us at the same time. It seems like that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think an awareness of your physical condition or whatever, your health, is a primary component. And caring for yourself, if you can be healthy, you caring for an illness, you can be healthy.
So the awareness of
your healthiness and caring for it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And what about the person that has some latent disease? Something that is going on in the body, and yet the person's not aware. Many cancers start out this way, mm-hmm. and you're not aware of them until much later in their development, or multiple sclerosis, or some of these chronic diseases, that you feel healthy, you feel like you're in a state of health, and yet there is some process going on within the body that is compromising that state. So health, I think we have to look at in terms of a continuum, that it's not health at one end and illness at the other, that you're either or, but you really move back and forth on this continuum. And you can be healthy even at the same time that you have some impairment or some disability or some disease process going on. You can maintain a certain state of health. And it has a lot to do with what has been said here, your awareness of it and your belief system, just being in touch with where you're at. I think one of the paradoxes is that we assume that health is a given or a right, and yet by many of our choices, our lifestyles, we're abusing that right, or we're neglecting that ourselves and causing breakdown, causing problems that may end up in the disease process. Now, a few decades ago, the major cause of illness and death in this country was due to infectious diseases, which were external causes. And that has all changed. Today, the major cause of illness and death is lifestyle. Choices that we make, which says that we do have some choice in whether we, not always, there are contingencies that we do not have any control over, but we do have control over quite a bit in our lifestyle choices. What we eat, whether we exercise or not, how we deal with problems and stresses in our life, how much we push ourselves, whether we listen to our bodies when they tell us, give us messages. There are lots of things that we can do in terms of taking more responsibility for ourselves. What about mental health? Touched on that a little bit. That's a little bit harder to define and also to measure. I think what you were talking about was the awareness, which certainly enters into one's definition of mental health, the belief system. Any other ideas on how you define mental health? Being able to cope with your environment.
Mm-hmm. Or respond to a stimulus or something from your environment in a way that is not to the norm that most people would respond, whether you know, doing something about it or coping with it in your own life, something that's different from the average person.
So finding your own way that works for you?
If it was, I think many people would judge, if it was significantly different from the way most, a lot of people would do it. We're speaking in terms of mental aspects, that it could be considered that that person perhaps might have mental illness, whether they do or not, I'm not trying to judge on it. It's the way I think maybe when I look at it, someone is different. When I do it as a child, that people might wonder, of hyperactivity or something else, whether with a mental part, or because a child responds differently.
Yeah, I think you're looking at certain normative behaviors. And again, the whole idea of balance, not moving too far out from that. Would others agree with that? Or disagree?
No, I would agree.
Okay, how would you put it?
Well, I was thinking in terms of there being a norm. I would find it very difficult to keep on what is norm to behavior. Maybe there are things that are obvious. There's so much behavior that person can feel with their own inner self quite well. I don't know, maybe I didn't have So, I guess I just really want to have
to be fine. Yes, psychologists from the very beginning, I think, have judged as far as what is mental health and what is not mental health based on the idea that of behavior that is considered normal by society. And perhaps not always so the best way to determine whether it's mental health or not, but certainly not.
About willingness to learn.
Willingness to learn?
Yeah.
Are you talking about an openness to?
Sorry. That way you could talk about the person who's healthy in a small town and then goes to the big city and finds out it's not the same, but is still willing to learn what's healthy in a big city. Or go from community to community and learn different ways of being healthy in different communities.
Which says that the norms really change then. There's some flexibility or they're not rigid norms that you adhere to. Somebody up there. That really picks up on it, doesn't it? The adapting to different situations.
You also have to have a strong sense of self-identity or a good self-esteem to be able to cope with the things that have been said already. If you can cope, then you must have a good self-esteem, a good idea of who you are.
I think that's really the bottom line that you've identified, the self-esteem, because it begins there, and the kind of messages that you give yourself are going to be related to that concept of self-esteem. Anybody else?
I have the willingness to admit we're all a little crazy when we accept that. We have our inconsistencies. Be glad that to some degree.
So then you're moving away from some of the normative, or is that still within?
Just admitting that we're human, that we're going to be perfect down this earth. We're all a little bit mixed up inside. And in doing so, we go up to being able to learn.
Frieda Fromm Reichman, a well-known psychiatrist, who said that we are all much more human than otherwise. Well, Freud defined mental health as the ability to work and to love. Sounds pretty simple.
It does.
Until you begin evaluating what working and loving means. Another way of defining it is valuing the best possible for you and acting on it. Ivan Illich, that probably many of you have are aware of and read, talks about it as a process of adaptation. During which one can actively change one's situation. And this implies that you can adapt to the different environmental changes that go on in one's life. The developmental aspects, maturation and aging, suffering and death that are all a part of life. I think for me, one of the most important concepts that has already been identified is the one of balance. Keeping aspects of the self in balance and also the self in relationship. Relationship to others and relationship to one's environment. And that's not always an easy thing to do. And it's going to be different for each individual. It's going to be different at different stages of our life, at different environments in which we exist, and that adaptation process is always going to be a part of it. Tillich has a wonderful essay called The Meaning of Health, and he talks about two basic elements in the life process dealing with this balance. One is self-identity, and the other self-alteration. And somehow keeping those two in balance. You need both. You need to go out from the self in order to learn more about yourself, and you need to return to the self in order to preserve the uniqueness of the self. And the dangers are that if you go too far out, then you lose the sense of self and you become defined by what's out there, by your environment. Or the other danger, if you stay too close to the self, then you become isolated from your environment and from the feedback you need from other people. How do you recognize mental health in yourself?
Feeling good about yourself.
Okay.
Liking yourself.
Liking yourself.
Absence of anxiety.
Absence of anxiety.
Learning to accept what you can't change.
Okay. Learning to accept what you cannot change. So an acceptance of what is.
I don't know if this is the same as the absence of anxiety, so I'm enjoying what I'm doing.
Good, okay.
I don't know if I agree with those two, because all of us sometimes have to do what we don't necessarily what we want to do. And there's times in our life we're going to be anxious about things. Like if we haven't got any food and any money, we're going to be anxious about it. And I think that's normal. And so I think they both can be normal.
Okay. Well, I think as we said before, what works for one is not necessarily going to be the same for another person.
Mm-hmm.
So you're being free from anxiety. And anxiety can, and often does, produce some good things. And we need a certain amount of anxiety in order to be motivated to get some things done. But again, it's that balance. How do you recognize mental health for yourself?
I would use the word cope, but I even think there are times when situations we can't cope with. I think there are situations that maybe we avoid. So I'm not really even sure what word I would use.
Drive is what you're saying.
Yeah.
In the coping in the room. Do what you need to protect your own ego, protect your own self, I guess.
To keep you feeling good about yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like feeling good about myself as me. I think we have within something that tells us.
So you get some messages.
Yeah, a lot of messages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even at times of stress or times of trouble, I think they probably have signals that say you're heading in the right direction in order to overcome the stress or something.
I think that's important to listen to the messages. We're more tuned in to bodily messages. When we're comfortable or uncomfortable, but mentally, we're not as aware always or take seriously what those messages are. I had a friend recently that was due to speak at some conference, and she'd had a lot of things going on in her life that were very stressful and shouldn't have gone, probably. When I talked with her a couple days before, she was still planning to go, but her situation was so stressful. And when we talked about the possibility of not going and using a physical illness as an excuse, if she'd had the flu or something physically wrong, she wouldn't have thought twice about calling to say, sorry, I can't make it. And she said, you know, I never knew I had the option of saying no because I was so mentally stressed. Somehow, we get a little skewed on that. Physical illness is legitimate. We can tap into that, and other people are going to listen to us, to take it seriously. But if we say, I've got too much stress in my life right now, I can't do it, we don't give ourselves permission to take that as seriously. And I think we need to. How do you recognize mental health in somebody else?
Behavior.
Okay, what kind of behavior?
Erratic, I suppose. In my opinion, it would be erratic. I mean, say whatever I think of that person. If they...
A mentally healthy person?
No, I meant... If I thought they were not mentally healthy, I suppose I could tell by their actions and by their behavior.
It's easier to define a person that's not mentally healthy than one that is, right?
That's right.
What do you look for in somebody else?
When they're mentally healthy?
When they're mentally healthy.
I suppose they're stable.
Okay.
You can say it depends on their reaction to a situation. You say, no, they will go off the deep end.
Look at their eyes.
What does that tell you?
To me? Well, if a person has glassy eyes and you see more white in the bottom than the top, you know that they're not very and so on, you know, just not healthy looking eyes. Mm-hmm. I think that's a giveaway.
I think to me that if you know the person before and expect a different either attitudes or neurotic or anxiety, different things, you know, appear different than what they were, you can follow up maybe.
So your knowledge of the person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And recognizing changes.
I think sometimes anxiety does, you know.
Or ability to cope with society as it is now set up and take care of their own problems. I think they'd have to be stable and mentally healthy.
So their behavior.
Well, their ability to cope with mm-hmm. with life stresses and situations.
Okay.
Some of the most mentally healthy people I've known have been the ones who everybody saw them as so stable because they just projected that. They just gave that impression that deep down, mm-hmm. they really start talking. You see so much. You know, so it's kind of like
mm-hmm.
interesting
mm-hmm.
thing. Sometimes
it is. So what may appear to be very healthy on the surface may be masking some mm-hmm. real problems.
Then on the other hand, the opposite of what I said about anxiety, somebody that has been on outgoing and everything, they may, you know, fall back in a quiet mood entirely different than what they were.
Mm-hmm. Pretty hard to read, isn't it?
It is.
We have the normative behaviors that we can judge, and that's pretty much what we use.
Mm-hmm.
But underneath the surface, there may be a lot of things going on in people's lives that they're not sharing, or we're not aware of, or in touch with.
I can personally think of a few people that are not, or have not been able to in the past cope with life's normal stresses or environment that you mentioned on there. And yet, I consider them mentally well,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether
mm-hmm.
you want to put it capable or whatever. I consider them mentally well. Yet they weren't able to perhaps cope with some of our stresses. And so in that respect, you know, society is kind of labeling, my labeling that it's not following the norm, you're not healthy because you're not normal, because you're not able to handle the pressures of society. But that wasn't it at all. Sometimes it can, you know, you ask it to be coming from a different environment, coming from just not being prepared for it, or
sure,
other
sure.
things that
mm-hmm. And again, it's that balance, and that can be very precarious at times.
Yeah.
Where the balance can be slanted in one direction or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a model or an equation, and then we'll break up into small groups and talk within the small groups about it, and each use one of the aspects. Let me explain it here better for you. You see, put a line here with mental health. Okay. Up here we have a couple boxes. Organic factors. Now, this can be disease factors, it can be illness, disabilities, whatever, that can be some kind of stress in one's life, and those you don't always have control over. This is just a general category of stressors. Why don't you just name a few? What kind of stressors? What do you see as stressors in your life?
Well, work pressure.
Work pressure.
Family.
Family pressure.
Lack of employment.
Lack of employment. Mm-hmm.
Illness.
Illness.
Loss of loved ones.
Loss. Loved ones. Death. Mm-hmm.
Organic factor.
Organic factor. So this is a more specific area, and this just is a large area of stressors, and it's going to be different for each one of you. Okay, down here we have three boxes. Self-esteem. Coping. Skills. And relationships. Now, somehow if you can keep these two sides in balance, and that's going to be different for each one, you're going to be able to maintain a pretty healthy mental status. If these get out of hand, then you're going to have to somehow increase this lower part. You're going to have to do something with self-esteem, with your coping skills, or with your relationships, drawing on your resources in this area. The maintenance of mental health is either decreasing the top part of the equation or increasing the lower part. These are all factors that you're going to be dealing with. What I'd like you to do now is to break up, let's see, I think three groups. And in your group, identify some stressors. Maybe someone or a couple of you want to share some particular stress that you've been dealing with recently. And then one group will look at this area and how self-esteem issues were used in dealing with the stressors. Another group will look at the coping skills, what you used in terms of coping skills to deal with that stress. And then the third group will look at relationships, how that was used as a resource in dealing with the stress.
Well, I would speak. We talked about stressors related to dying.
both the stressor on the person, which tends to be the stressor on the person that is terminally ill, for example, and that we talked about some cases that we knew where a person actually did things to increase their self-esteem in the year and month during which that person was dying. And I presume that mental health during even the dying process is significant. We also talked about having loved ones to die and the stress involved with that and the need for self-esteem. And we saw that mechanism coming through primarily other persons helping us and assisting us with the process of raising that self-esteem at times like that. We also talked about another stressor, and that is the stressor that comes when another person rejects a relationship and severs the relationship, and our self-esteem then itself is very beaten down generally. Our physical tendencies are strong there. There again, we discussed ways in which our self-esteem could be raised at a time like that.
Did you identify any ways that, what ways it could be raised?
Most of what we talked about related to being in touch with other people for affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you mentioned that it couldn't be someone else telling you that you actually wrote something. It has to be yourself also believing
that.
Right.
Anybody have any questions of this group and the whole aspect of self-esteem? Thank you. What about the second group back in the corner there? What type of stressor were you identifying, and what kind of coping skills did you come up with?
We spent the whole time talking about grief, the loss of a loved one, and several different things that could be coping skills. One was, we talked about first, I think it was denial, and we talked about how that maybe could be a useful way of coping in the very short term. But you know, if it went long term, that wouldn't be very healthy. Talked about different aspects about sharing with, leaning on friends for support and talking it out periodically with friends and not going it on your own. You know, kind of, both as kind of a letting out of emotion and, you know, working through different things related to that. When we talk about guilt and what might be useful to determine whether there was really guilt in relationship to the death and the need for forgiveness and the whatever guilt that there was, that it be taken seriously. Does the person take it seriously and lean on friends to, you know, to express that to people so that you know, there could be some absolving of the guilt from other people, that it would be hard to forgive oneself in that situation.
So being open about talking about your feelings.
Yeah. help.
Anybody else from the group have? Okay. What about the group over here? Dealing with relationships? How did you find that as useful?
Well, we spent a lot of time describing a situation of a move from a small town to a large city, a stay of a long term of 7 years, breaking the relationships that had been developed there and moving to a place where there were relationships that had been established previously and relying on the renewal of those relationships in the new town, the new city. And,
so that's kind of picked up for the lack of being skilled, perhaps, in the new environment. Having a relationship that has continued.
Pretty important, I think, for any other comments on that, or comments about relationships and their importance in dealing with stresses, just from this group, whole group.
Actually, all three groups said the same thing.
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it?
You can tell a lot of the person's state of mental health, I think, by the way that they relate to other people. You can pick up a lot of clues. You can tell how they feel about themselves. You can tell their attitudes toward other people, the way they treat other people, the way they interact with other people. I think this has been talking before about how to identify mental health in another person. I think that's one of the ways people don't have to tell you a whole lot. If you're seeing and observing, you can learn a lot about that person just by the way they connect with other people or they don't connect with other people, the way they treat each other.
Good point. What about the group upstairs? They've diminished.
Well, we talked about, we had a specific structure about quitting her job, and she felt that she it was not real stressful for her to do, because she thought it was really a good job, but, and it was a good job. You know, as far as thinking she was in charge and all this stuff, but she wasn't feeling it. She was really herself and stuff. And now that she's giving it up, it's like, I'm really not doing it too much. So we kind of look at self-esteem and coping skills as being the things that have helped her most.
Okay, the messages that she was giving herself and then what was used as coping skills there. To identify some of those. Hard to separate out, isn't it? The three of these, because there's so much overlapping. You need the relationships to help out with the self-esteem, to get feedback on where you're at, to validate who you are. And that's part of the coping skills as well. And I think the group back here dealt with both negative as well as positive. The denial can be a positive for short term, but if it's extended into the long term, it becomes a negative way of coping. So recognizing again that balance. Any other comments before our time is already over 5 o'clock? But
that sometimes I think people have a tendency to define mental health in terms of relationships and their relationships, and or another person's mental health in how they relate to people. And I think you always have to think, well, this is the way I'm thinking, this is the way I'm sensing how this person is behaving. You know, maybe they're more of whatever, it's completely different. So I just always never try and stress or emphasize the relationship too much, because, you know, self-esteem is, I just think that sometimes there's that tendency.
Maybe not a balance.
That balance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you're going back to that normative behavior again.
Mm-hmm.
And yet...
Keep rocking out there.
And yet allowing for differences, because each individual is unique, unique personality, and is going to respond in their own way, but not straying too far from the normative. So keeping that in balance.
One thing that strikes me is by the discussion and everything, you put an awful big burden on relationships. And considering how transitory most of our relationships are these days, it seems a little tenuous, you know, the way everybody moves around. And,
are you questioning?
No, I think it's
putting
true.
Much
it
on
just seems like it puts a lot of strain on relationships to put that much burden on them.
Well, that would be an interesting topic to talk about sometime, just the whole area of relationships.
Yeah.
Because I think there are many different levels of relationships. Mm-hmm. And different types of relationships do different things for us.
Yeah.
Mm.
You can really make something out of whether you were the recipient of helpful relationships or whether you were the helper.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I remember when people helped me move. Yeah, I thought I had friends for life, and it's kind of came out that way. So being a helper has a great value as well as being a recipient of help.
Mm-hmm. What somebody mentioned earlier about being open to being helped,
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we have another session on Saturday. Maybe we should use that for talking about relationships. I think it's about 10:45 on Saturday morning. I think we will. That's an important area.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your coming and your
mm-hmm.
Contributions. It's an awful lot to confine to 1 hour.
Yeah.